Hey, beautiful. This is Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am the host of the Mother Tree Network, where spirituality and earth wisdom meet racial justice and women's leadership.
Hey, gorgeous. This episode is brought to you by the Mother Tree community. This is a community of mostly women who are standing for justice, who are rooted in love, and who are willing to learn from the earth. So if you want to find out more about us, go to my website, dramandakemp.com, and just click on Mother Tree Community. I'd love to have you in there with us. So this episode features Dr. Beverly. And Dr. Beverly is this magical woman who I met not too long ago. But what was so interesting was that we actually were in high school during the same years in the same small town outside of New York City. I went to an all-girls boarding school up in Dobbs Ferry, and she went to the local public school. And, you know, we both went through our experiences as young, very bright girls in predominantly white spaces, and we never met each other. Until years later, here we are in our 50s, both owning our own businesses. Dr. Beverly is a leadership coach and an organizational development expert. And so we got to meet and learn about her program, her whole philosophy of life, which is like transformational jewels. So in this episode, you're going to hear Dr. Beverly talk about taking responsibility for your life, like caring for your life as if you're the steward of something extremely valuable. She's going to talk about, you know, how we heal blocks and trauma and become leaders who are stronger and better for it because of what we've been through. And then, you know, she also talks about quantum healing. And I've always been interested in that, but I've never really talked about quantum stuff because, I guess for a long time I've been afraid of being considered woo-woo, but truly inside I am woo-woo, and I think it is true. So, and quantum healing is based on the idea that a pattern exists on a spiritual or on an etheric level, even if it's been removed on a physical level. So she talks about her, her great aunt, and how even though her leg was amputated, she still had pain. So I think about how that applies to our emotional wounds and how, you know, we think, okay, well, we left that job or we graduated from that school or we let that relationship go. But is there an etheric or energetic pattern there that is still causing us harm, having us relive the hurt? This is definitely resonates with something in my personal life where, you know, you can pass on a pattern mother to child via, you know, in utero and have it be energetic and have your child still suffer the effects, even if they didn't have the physical disorder or disease. So this is definitely a rich area. And the other thing I just want to point about this episode is Dr. Beverly talks about a medical mission that she supports, sending support to West Africa and through EJ's charities. And I just love how she is grounded in herself, comfortable with where she's at in her life, and making change, making ripples, while staying very steady. So I think you're going to love this interview, and I'll see you on the other side. All right. Welcome, Dr. Beverly Carter to the Mother Tree Network.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
It is such a pleasure to have you. What's so funny is, our crazy history, how when we were teenagers, we were both living in the same small town without knowing it.
Isn't that amazing?
Like, I mean,
Yeah.
Like 40 years later, meeting each other on the internet and realizing that we were in that same little town in Westchester County in New York.
Yeah, quite literally. And I mean, and maybe the irony in all of it is, you know, I'd certainly been multiple times to your high school, your campus. So I'm yeah. Oh,
my God.
So it may be that I saw you or we said hi in the courtyard or by the auditorium or something. And yeah, who knew it would take 40 years.
Wow. Well, I am so excited. I'm so excited. Let me tell everybody who you are. So Dr. Beverly Carter is a transformation agent. She is a woman who has lived extensively in East and West Africa. She's addressed the UN on the status of rural women. She has her own business and company, which she's the CEO of, which I will let her share about with you. And she is the creator of the Transformational Jewels program. And yeah. Besides all of that, she is also somewhat one of the few Black women girls in my town.
Yeah.
When we were in high school at the same time. So, welcome, Dr. Beverly.
It is, as I said, such a pleasure to be here. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
So tell me, what is good? What's good in your world today?
Oh, my goodness. I can't, like, there's so much amazing, so much good, you know, that's happening. But you're asking about, like, the now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's amazing is I recognize and I understand how I've been a victim of my past, but I'm a leader of the now and of the future.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's what's happening. I'm in a creation mode.
Ooh. And for those viewers who can't see her, we just had a little neck thing happen.
Yeah.
I am in a creation mode.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I am the leader. I'm the leader in the now. So
yeah,
this sounds like there's a story in there. How did you go from this sense of yourself as a leader in the now, having been a victim of the past?
Oh, I love that question. And I think it's probably the journey of discovery that all of us are on. You know, we're at different points in, you know, in that understanding or in that discovery. And I deliberately put myself on that path by looking to grow in every way possible. And the catch with growth is everybody wants to grow, but nobody wants to go through the pain of growth. And I'm not going to say I'm any different, except I know I can't get to the other side until I walk through, you know, those moments to break through and, mm-hmm. you know, and move through the past, the things that have prevented me from wanting to move forward, and really embrace, who I am, my authentic self to become the leader, you know, or a leader in the now.
Mm-hmm.
For the future. Yeah.
Okay. So, it'll help us, I think, if you give us an example of a part of your past that used to hold you back.
Sure.
That you've grown through.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's funny. There are many things. I will say, being a woman of color and different, taller than most, bigger than most, you know, and people love to point out how you're different and why you're different and what you should do about those differences. And it sort of kind of makes you a little hypersensitive, you know, exactly who it is people are seeing.
Mm.
Because I mean, we look out, we rarely look in.
Mm.
So I may not see myself the same way that you see me,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because my focus is outward.
Mm-hmm.
And so over time, it's sort of like the patterns, the behavior patterns that I adopted to hide, maybe, or to mask, or to not show up fully or authentically because I wasn't comfortable with the, you know, the what I was getting back from not all, but some people, mm-hmm. you know, the lack of empathy, the lack of kindness. You know, it's not enough to point out there's a problem if you're not going to offer a solution or a possibility. Mm. And as I grew and I understood, you know, it's not that I'll say they're wrong. It's their opinion, but it's my opinion. It's what I take in that makes a difference for how I see myself and how I choose to move forward. Mm-hmm. And in doing, in understanding that, you know, I decided, well, you know, ultimately what's most important, how I show up in the world or how people see me in the world. And I said, well, you know, it's really me. It's how I show up. And it's, you know, and it's my greatest hope that the world will see the best parts of me. And if there's something that's not so great that you pointed out, but come to me with a solution, a possibility. So maybe I can grow in a healthy way and not feel the need to hide or shrink or be less of who I am. And of course, make the decision, you know, to be the greatest version of myself at all times, because I'm not serving anybody by being less than I could possibly be. So it's sort of giving myself permission to have the audacity to be my true self, my authentic self, and to do the things that encourage that growth and, you know, to become a leader in my own life. Mm. And then, of course, for the future, because, you know, that's a part of my role, is to speak life, love, and embodiment and support into those people who come into my sphere of influence, and to lead them back to themselves.
Mm. You know, I want to think about what you're saying, because since we're contemporaries, we are women of a certain age. Did you say?
I said, we're not 20 anymore.
No, we're not 20 anymore, you know? And I think this age, and I'll say for me, I don't want to presume for you, but for me, in my 50s, I feel like I'm really at this beautiful, queenly stage.
Literally, yeah.
Yes, the stage of owning myself. You mentioned the word audacity.
Yes.
And you did a little neck thing again.
Yes. Yes. I think that's in the DNA, though. You know.
No, but I feel like there's something in you now.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe as a woman, of a mature woman, yes, in a queenly stage of life that, yes, maybe, you know, wouldn't have been there earlier.
It would not have been. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. And I think that's the importance to this, you know, to the walk, right? Of being the victim of the past, like really understanding where you've come from, because, you know, there's value in those experiences, in those moments. Mm-hmm.
So there's value in those past experiences where you were victimized. Is that what you just said?
Absolutely. That's what I said.
Mm-hmm. Because I know you have this whole transformational jewels thing where you look at those things where you were victimized and you look for jewels. Tell us a little bit about that. Wait. I got to get back to East and West Africa. Hey, today's episode is sponsored by DrAmandaKemp.com, my business. And I want to invite you to download a free gift. I've put together something called the 5 signs it's time to slow down your social justice or your racial justice. And basically, it's a little sheet
so that you can check and see, do I need to slow down what I'm doing and what you can do instead? So go ahead over to drmandakemp.com, to my website, and you will see an option to download that cheat sheet for 5 signs it's time to slow down your racial justice or your social justice. Thanks for listening.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because that happened a while ago, right?
Yes,
it's been a younger stage of your life.
Well, yes and no. So it's been throughout, right? So some aspects earlier, some still continue.
Oh, okay. So when did you first begin to get involved? And was it in East Africa first and then West Africa?
Yeah, well, that's so funny. So, okay, we'll focus on Africa then. So it was East Africa first. I was in undergrad and I decided to do my quote unquote junior year abroad. And I lived in Spain. And on that trip, it was like there was no way I could be so close to the continent of Africa and not make that crossing. So of course, you know, I was like, okay, it's time to go. So we, you know, I had some friends, we got on a boat and head over from, across the, Gibraltar into, Morocco, Ceuta, Melilla, and then on down to Morocco. And I was like, we made it. Awesome. Okay. And then I want to say, like, my real education began, right? So there's what you're told, and then there's reality. And I was like, oh, my goodness, look at all of this. What an extraordinary opportunity. And so what happened through, I guess I want to say at the end, or maybe even at some point during, I made the decision that, I needed to go back. I needed to see more, and I needed just to breathe it in and, you know, not just to reacquaint myself, but, you know, just soak it up, if that makes any sense. I mean, there's a lot of generational stuff that, you know, that happens in our lives as women of color, you know, and so now to be back on the continent of, you know, of origin, was just our origin, my origin. It was just so, so vitally important. And then I wound up, it's so funny. I wound up, visiting friends. We were up at Harvard and they have a Institute for International Development. And I just fell in love with the mission and the vision and, applied and, they were like, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, cause I was like, I want to go to Kenya. I'm feeling Kenya right now. And then I was off and, really, really, reveling in that experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many powerful life lessons, so many powerful experiences, such rich content, you know, in that almost 2 years in Kenya.
And were you there in your 20s?
Yeah, I was.
So yeah, give us an example of a rich experience or rich content so we know what you're talking about.
You got it. So some wonderful examples are being like walking through the Kakamega forest for the first time and just feeling the peace you know, and the life happening around me, just lying down on the, you know, on the ground on the outside of the forest and just soaking up the energy, experiences with malaria, almost dying, and just, you know, just really being snapped back, to life, you know, my understanding of what what life really means and the value, I think, you know, of life, because I think we certainly take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching English and biology and home science, and, you know, an extraordinary group of young people that I got a chance to really share with. And I thought, oh, my goodness, how amazing is this? I get a chance to teach home economics to people who don't use a traditional oven. I mean, they're talking about, you know, logs on the fire. So, you know, so kind of, you know, my mindset for what it means to set the oven is out the window. Okay. you know, so I taught at two different boarding schools, and I should really rephrase that and say I was taught.
I was just thinking that.
Uh-huh. Very much so. Every moment of every day. And it was a blast. Simple things, even word pronunciation, you know, the key languages, Kiswahili and Kiluo or Kiluya in the areas that I was in. You know, and I may put a simple word on the board in biology, like aluminum, which we all know what that is, aluminum. And they're like, no, madam, that's aluminium.
Yeah. Oh, let's go back to that forest moment. Cause you know, this is the Mother Tree Network.
Oh yes. Oh my God. Yes.
So before you went to Kenya, did you have an affinity for forests or for trees?
Yeah. 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 No question. They called me. And, you know, I was like, okay, don't watch me because I know it's weird, you know, but like, I just get caught in the majesty of them and, you know, and I've got a touch or, you know, if it calls me for that. And and sometimes it's just breathing in that energy, you know, because it's so much, very much alive. Nurturing and strengthening. So, I don't understand it all and I don't try to, but you know, if they call me, I go.
Okay. If they call you, you go. So do you find yourself, in terms of your own journey, have forests or trees called you or guided or supported you?
I would absolutely say yes to that. I mean, again, you know, there's something, you know, maybe it's quantum, you know, but there's something in the field that is, you know, in our lives, whether we're aware of it or not, or conscious of it or not, that support us in our walk here on Earth, you know, our walk here in the world. And I think there's so many of those things, those supports that are available to us that we're unaware of. But yes, I've always loved to, you know, I've loved plants and, you know, trees and flowers. I mean, all those things really, the aesthetic appeals to me, but there's more to it than that. It's their aliveness. It's their life cycle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So in your home now or around your home, are there plants or flowers or a tree, anything that you have relationship with right now?
Well, absolutely. It is funny you would ask me that because, you know, this is garden season. And so, so we just doubled our garden, this year, which is a huge thing. Yeah. And, I have just been having a blast. You could call it playing in the dirt, whatever you want to call it. By the time I'm done, I'm in a very good space. So,
me too.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about, you know, like you have a little argument with somebody or there's a little hurt, you know, somebody said, and you know, it's not a big thing and you don't need to take it that way. But I find the thing that dissolves it rather than just telling myself to push it away. What dissolves it is in the dirt, planting, watering, pruning, actually working with life.
Yeah. And I love that you said that because it's so true. It's, you know, we are so easy to push it away, but you don't really, you know, you just store it in your cells, you know, until it builds and builds and builds and builds. And it's like, yeah, no, that doesn't really work. long term. So that whole thought of dissolving it is just so on time.
Mm-hmm. And when I think about colonization, and because I'm thinking about decolonization these days, I'm thinking about how late I am to the LAN party. It's like, you know, it feels like in the last 10 years, a lot of people have been talking about land, meaning Black people, people working for liberation, justice, have been talking about land. And I've been like, huh, land. Like, it really didn't mean anything to me. I was like, okay, you want to be a farmer? Wow, no interest in that over here. Things changed for me during the pandemic, really dramatically. And that thing about land, reconnecting with land as a path of transformation or liberation. I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, absolutely. I mean, so we're reminded every day, just looking at what's happening on the border or the migrant crisis. If we take nothing else from the experience, we know that we want to live the best lives possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we're willing to pay the price to do that, to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and people are looking for new land, new ways, new places to open up, to grow, and to have and create the kind of lives we want. So I think, you know, that whole idea of land and, you know, and reconnecting to it has so many important purposes, right? Yes, in terms of our physical body and the quantum network that we live in, and reconnecting to it and diving into that energy. On a physical level, where, you know, we're looking for the space for freedom, and land really represents that for a lot of us. We take it for granted, but I think once you see the number of people who are willing to pay the price to be here for things that we take for granted, makes us really rethink, the value of the land. And what we're looking to grow toward, mm-hmm. and grow for, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 And this idea, or not an idea, remembering that we are creatures of the land, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also the other side, I mean, the whole thing with 40 acres and a mule, I mean, I completely get it. But you know, we recognize that we're not going to be able to erase centuries of generational trauma with 40 acres and a mule. It's just, you know, it was just a place to start to give people a chance at freedom. And it's a freedom that we're still looking for in many ways.
Yeah. And, you know, just something else that's occurred to me recently, because you mentioned the forest, so I'm bringing this up. Being on forested land, especially kind of old growth, yeah. Forested land has a different energy and a capacity, I think, to hold you or to accompany you or to, what do you think? What are your thoughts or feelings about that?
Well, you know, it's, I love that you said that, or asked that question, because, maybe one of my very first extraordinary experiences in Kenya was driving from Nairobi to Kisumu and seeing the animals, the flamingos, the giraffes on the side of the road. And I was like, wait a minute, this is not the Maasai Mara. Like, this is not the safari. Like, how is this possible? And, and they were just running free, doing what they're supposed to do. And I'm thinking, oh my God, we're not in a zoo. We're like, this is like, it just blew my mind, because clearly we don't have that here in the same way. I mean, you know, big animals anyway, you know, beyond the raccoons and squirrels and basic stuff that we see here,
mm-hmm.
all in the States. But, yeah, so there's you know, there's something just so powerful about us as humanity attempting to tame our world, right? So we can live in it. And the world is like, hey, there's something, there's an energy here that is greater, that's been here longer than you. And no matter how hard you try, we're not going anywhere. So there's always going to be, I think, some, you know, some reminder that, you know, that the universe is in control.
Yeah. There's a couple things that you said, Beverly, that I'm curious about, because I think they reflect a worldview. And so I would love to hear you talk about it more explicitly. Absolutely. You've used the word quantum network.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean for you?
Yeah. You know, that's a great question, too. My goodness. I want to say this. Maybe one of the best examples of this, and it does occur to me that people might not be aware of what I mean when I talk about quantum, you know, the quantum network, quantum healing, is I have an aunt who, she's 92 years old. She's an amputee. And every now and then has phantom pains. And phantom pains mean that, and in this case, she had her leg amputated, her left leg amputated. It means that her, the pain is happening in the foot of the leg that was amputated. So there's no foot, but she's got this tremendous and intense pain. And so she says, I'm not sure how this is possible. How can my toe hurt? And it's not even there. And I said, you know, Auntie, it's because we are all a part of the quantum grid, right? So we're created on so many levels, physically, mentally, spiritually, etherically, on all of these levels, right? And just because one level is missing doesn't mean the other levels don't exist. So even though the leg may physically not be there, the foot may physically not be there, its pattern, its quantum pattern is there because, it was created when she was, and it doesn't go away. And so now here she is, you know, trying to understand how it's possible that this foot could hurt. And my reminder to her is because it's only the physical part of your leg that was removed, but the spiritual or the etheric is still in full force.
Wow. It's still
physical, right?
So, I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that story. And I'm so happy to hear you have an auntie who is so elder and in your life. And
oh,
I mean,
absolutely. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's like having an old growth tree, you know.
I believe it. So it'll be 93 in June, and I am so grateful and humbled to have her, you know, in our lives.
Yeah. But I'm thinking about, I'm thinking about talking about the quantum field and the quantum network to someone, you know, who's older, maybe who grew up, and this may not be your aunt. For all I know, your aunt may be like, you know, a new age magician, witchy lady. No, she's not. Okay. So, but a lot of Black people have grown up under Black Christianity.
Yes.
Or some form of Christianity. And so the ideas that you just spoke of would come across as, I don't know what to say, puzzling or, maybe not resonant. I don't know. What is your experience with that?
Well, here's the thing. I take the position that it's my job to speak the truth as I understand it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I understand, I realize that, you know, it may not land, but my job is still to speak it and then to do my best to explain it. And guess what? The medical doctors can't explain it at all. They have nothing. So, you know, so I'm like, okay, let it be an experiment. Hold the thought for a while and see how it feels to you. And, you know, and if it doesn't work for you, then you've lost absolutely nothing. Right. But, you know, for me, it certainly doesn't take away my understanding of energy or the quantum field that she doesn't understand it or wouldn't understand it. So, yeah, so that's sort of how I look at a lot of these things.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Queen.
What queen?
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I, you know, I was just thinking, you know, I shared some, a little bit of background about Kenya, but I didn't share anything about Nigeria in the West Africa, work. And that work was very different, of course, from Kenya in that, we created, I'm a part of a group called EJ's Charities. It was started by, an extraordinary woman, physician, who, she started, training in Nigeria, and was a gynecologist, and then decided she came to the United States, went to Harvard, and she was encouraged to study, family medicine, or, you know, just become a general practitioner because she got a chance then to touch like all aspects of the body, in terms of its healing. And, so she, you know, went through her program and decided after that every year she would go home and visit. And in every visit, she would take home, medications, and she would open up her own clinic for her family and people in her village. And so the IDU, and her name is, she's Dr. Ijeoma Nduka, MD, and she started her program, EJ's Charities, in that way. And then it grew. And, so we provide, free medical care, on medical missions to Nigeria. And initially we started at different locations throughout Nigeria. Oh, and also we did Haiti after the earthquake, which is extraordinary too. And we're focused on just giving people, you know, the opportunity to heal or to learn or to grow, in, what they need in order to live a better quality life. Different types of missions in the different locations that we provided them in. So some were, women's health, others were surgical missions, others were, general overall care. And then we would just come with a team of doctors, and people to assist, from the United States, along with our medications and whatever else we, you know, we brought with us. And then we would hire, doctors and a team on ground in Nigeria to really round out this process. And we've just had extraordinary results in doing this. So, oh my goodness, I want to say maybe almost 20 years, give or take, you know, that we've been doing this, this work with the medical missions in and of themselves. In the last 7 or 8 years, put a location on ground in a place called Umuahia in Nigeria, which is, I think it's the eastern, sort of the eastern, part of Nigeria, mm-hmm. east of Lagos. Yeah.
So Beverly, do you have a medical background?
Nope. I do not.
Oh, okay. Okay. I just wanted to check because I was like, I didn't realize what the doctorate was in.
Yeah, no, my background is in leadership and development. Yeah. So organization development. So really my work happens long before we get on ground, mm-hmm. In terms of the planning and development and structure of, you know, of the work. And then on ground, I just fit in where I fit in. Which turned out to be the pharmacy. Who knew?
Ah, okay. So you're like an operations mastermind.
You could say that.
Or is it more like a relationship builder?
It's all of the above, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's the, I believe that's the beauty to, and the strength behind leadership, because it's wherever, you know, wherever you are, wherever you wind up in an organization or in your life or in the world, where you get the opportunity to choose how you're going to present, how you're going to show up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So we were talking about the quantum and talking to people and sharing the truth as you know it. And you gave the medical example about how medical doctors, Western trained allopathic medicine, has no idea why that happens. And then you brought up West Africa and the medical missions. I wonder if there was anything spiritually, that you learned or opened up for you when you were in West Africa. In Nigeria, I guess, specifically.
Yeah. I think the truth is, it's always about, for me, I know you're asking spiritually, but it's always about the grounding and centering.
So we were talking about openings, things that you came to understand. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And so, I want to say that, there are, you know, maybe one of the best examples of this, especially on a medical mission, and especially in, West Africa in particular, is experiencing death. You know, just how quick it can be snatched from us. Watching, a gentleman who was, a driver, and surrounded for almost an entire week of a full medical staff, an international medical staff, but never one time came in to see, get a checkup or touch base, with anyone, that he was feeling any one way about, what was happening in his body, and to, have him just keel over, behind the wheel, and, you know, and of course eventually die. It is, I don't know that I have words, but it's stunning. It's a stunning moment, to understand that, you know, yes, the life that we have is a gift, but we are the stewards of our lives, and we have a responsibility for being sure that we're taking care of it, in every way possible. And it doesn't mean that we're not going to die, because that's the promise for all of us. But it does mean that while we're here, we need to do everything we can to be sure that, that we can do, that we can live our lives as fully and authentically as possible. So I think, you know, that experience was one that I'd never, had before, where we were able to, we're in the village. So, you know, we literally are driving in the car to get him to the closest hospital. The hospital is on strike, you know, and then, you know, the people, the doctors, when we could find one to come in. I mean, we were doing our own resuscitation and, you know, doing whatever we could to assist. But there weren't any things on hand to really help us keep him here longer. And so it was, it was devastating for a number of reasons. But again, it really, really underscored the importance of, self-care and understanding that, you know, our bodies are the vessel that our spirits live in. So, you know, we have that responsibility to ourselves and to our world to do the best we can to make ourselves as healthy as possible, to keep ourselves as healthy as possible.
Yes. So we're going to take a break for our sponsor, word from our sponsor. And then we're going to come back and talk about transformational jewels.
Wonderful.
So we're back and we're going to ask Dr. Beverly Carter to open up the jewelry box. Tell us about transformational jewels and how not to be a victim of our past.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. So transformational jewels is such a gift to me for a number of reasons. And it's about really looking at our stories, our experiences, and processing them. And, you know, there are a variety of tools, tips, and techniques that that I work with and take people through to really consider, you know, their experiences from different perspectives, you know, almost as metaphors for healing, you know, personal blocks in our lives. And it's really the methods that I've used. And, you know, as I started out earlier in the segment, sharing that, you know, how I've become a leader in the now by really learning how to work through or traverse victimhood in my past to become the leader in my now and for my future. So this jewel box, jewelry box, transformational jewels, is about that. And it's about understanding the value in your past experiences, even, you know, the most difficult moments, and moving forward and, you know, back to yourself and back to your purpose, what you're here for, what you're here to do. Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. So I'm just taking some notes. Have you ever read Maladoma Somme, Patrice Maladoma Somme?
Yeah.
Okay. He's a West Africa, Burkina Faso.
Okay.
And yes. He's an elder. He just recently passed. His book is The Healing Wisdom of Africa. Mm-hmm. And in it, he talks about how an indigenous cultures, and specifically in his village, the understanding was that each person had a purpose. And that it was the job of the village, of the collective, to help you discern it and then to co-create it with you, give you a place to practice it out. You know what I mean? So yeah. When you said your jewelry box is about understanding the value of your past and then bringing that back to your purpose, like it just made me think of that. Because it's a way of understanding what's happened as not something that shouldn't have happened. We're sorry it happened. But it's almost like you could look at it like an initiation, you know, so that but to get the jewel, someone has to maybe assist you through that initiation.
I think you're absolutely right with that. And, you know, the fact is we are not here alone. We were not created to be alone. We were created to interrelate, to co-create, you know, and I think there's a powerful reason for that. So, and it's just like, you know, like you've described, you know, sometimes there are aspects of ourselves that we just can't see, you know, pieces of ourselves that, you know, we're unaware of, it's unconscious. You know, about our behavior and the ways that we're doing, you know, in the process of becoming or being. And you need somebody to point that out to you or to help have that conversation with you so you can choose what your next steps are going to be. You know, it's all about choice. And so therefore we get to choose our next steps. But first you have to be aware of where you are, so you know where you want to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you say going back into the past, the value of your past, of the victimhood, the places where you were victimized.
Yeah.
I just wonder about, you know, a lot of us can say that some of the hard things that we went through, you know, although for some people just saying what was hard is
part of the journey is just to acknowledge that something was really hard. So I'm not trying to downplay that as valuable. But I guess what I'm wondering about is some things get stuck in the body. So it's not just a question of your mind knowing something happened, you know? Yeah. What about the things that are kind of like, you don't want them to be in you, but they're still in you. You find yourself repeating patterns.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole point. You know, so, I mean, it does become a matter of perspective. It becomes a matter of what you understand. But here's the one thing I have understood is I have yet to meet anybody who doesn't have issues or traumas or past experiences that they would love to sweep under the rug and never look back at again.
Yes.
But those things keep popping forward. So it's like the truth of what you resist persists. You don't get rid of it. You know, if it doesn't stay in your mind and in the immediate moment, your body knows the truth. I mean, that's a book, Dr. Bethel Vanderkolk wrote, The Body Keeps the Score. Why? Because all of these experiences are stored in our physical bodies, in our psyches, and they continue to replay and replay and replay. And the problem with the replay is a lot of times in the replay, the stories get distorted. So there's the truth between what happened and then the story that you tell. And you know, and this is why it's so important to, you know, to do the work and to find the value in the experience. And these experiences are just like lighthouses, right? They're there to show you something. They're, you know, the job though of these experiences, is for you to like get in there, dig in, get the lesson, and then move past it. You're not supposed to stay there. Right. And so, you know, this is the whole point of transformational jewels. You know, if you've had the experience, it will always be a part of what created us, what makes us who we are in the moment. But we don't have to be impeded by those negative thoughts and those negative experiences or, you know, the things that are keeping us from moving forward. We can move forward anyway. And by lessening the impact of some of those experiences in our world and really, you know, rediscovering ourselves, which is our own personal leadership journey, right? How we identify who we are and how we discover those gems and jewels within ourselves. And then how we show up to be the leaders in our now and in our futures and, you know, those who are around us.
Mm. So if people want to find out more about you, Beverly, and transformational jewels and the processes that you use, how can they do that?
For right now, I would recommend that people can reach out to me. They can send me an email at anewlifeglobal@gmail.com.
Anewlifeglobal@gmail.com.
Yes.
That's great. And is A New Life Global, is that the name of your company?
Yes.
Okay. Because I thought that sounded familiar.
Yes. All right. Yes. So we're still in the process of, you know, putting up websites and support materials for the programming that we're bringing forward. So, but in the meantime, you know, you can reach me there.
anewlifeglobal@gmail.com. And are you out there on any social media? Is that part of your presence or no?
There is some, yes, on Facebook, and TikTok. But for the most part, the easiest way is, just to send me a quick little email and I can bring you right into the loop for what's happening and how to get more involved.
Beautiful. So personal.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
I love that. I really do. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Beverly Carter, founder of A New Life Global, for being, you know, a thought leader, a leader of the now and into the future, for journeying through your own victimhood in the past, you know, for all your contributions to the world, the charities, for learning from young girls, all of that. Thank you for bringing that into the world. And we look forward to collaborating with you in the future.
Thank you so much. This has just been a joy, and to connect with you too, Dr. Amanda Kemp, and the Mother Tree Network. I'm delighted, to say the least, and do look forward to working again with you in the future.
All right.
So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Beverly, a woman who is committed to growth in every aspect of her life. And I'm just really glad to be reminded that our life is something to steward. And at any moment, it could radically change, or it could be taken away. And so while we have it, to pay attention, to love ourselves, to care for ourselves, I think it's just such an important reminder. So if you want to get more from Dr. Beverly, I hope you will check her out. Find the links on my website, dramandakemp.com. That's where you can go for the show notes. Thank you all for listening. And please leave us a review. If something you've heard today lifts you up or made you think or fed your spirit, please leave us a review. It really helps people to find us, and it helps me to know that this podcast is making a difference. Peace and love.